vindication for him because he left the Army out of frustration, and this was the way he ended up being in charge of the American military effort there as well as the
war. Okay, what about Mr. Funkhauser?
Funkhauser was a corps at the 3rd Legion.
Okay. Did you have any relationship with him?
Oh yeah, sure. Dublin. He came out. He had volunteered to come to Vietnam from being. He was ambassador to something, Gabon or something like that. The Cameroons, I forgot somewhere.
Okay.
And had volunteered and came out and did a very, very decent job.
Okay.
He was down the street actually.
Oh really? Oh, okay. There were two other individuals at that level that I'd be interested to hear your feelings about. One was C.A. James. I don't know what the C period A period stand for, but he was another region advisor.
Region advisor. He had the second region.
That's right.
For a while.
Could that perhaps be the person Hatcher James?
No, that's a different one.
Okay.
Hatcher James had the Saigon city advisory.
Okay.
And C.A. James was an aide officer, came out of the aide, as did Hatcher.
Okay.
And was our senior up there and did very well.
And the other person is a W. Wilson.
Wilbur Wilson was John Dan's deputy.
Okay.
He was a retired colonel and a very tough curmudgeon.
Okay.
He died shortly. Either after or before John was buried next to him. I don't know.
I wrote a letter to L. Wade Lathan asking him about his relationship knowledge of Phoenix, and he said to me, I was in charge of MACV staff level of all aspects of pacification except for Phoenix, for reasons I won't go into, but of which you may be aware. Am I reading something into that, or?
I think what he's saying is essentially the CIA, while he was there, remember I replaced him.
As acting chief of staff?
As assistant
chief of staff.
And Phoenix was barely gotten going by then, and it was pretty much a CIA project.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the CIA was pretty much, trying to get it off the ground and going. When I came, we turned it over to Ford's away from the station. That's what he needed.
Okay. And he obviously did not want to be involved then in a CIA operation.
I guess he wasn't involved in the CIA.
Okay. Now, a few things about the RD program. I got some documents from the Joint Chief of Staff, and believe me, it was like pulling teeth. And they came from the office of the SACSA, Special Assistant for Counterinsurgency and Special Operation Activities, their RD division, Revolutionary Development Division, which, when the military takes over Phoenix, becomes the overseer at that level of the Phoenix program. Subsequently, an interesting thing today, when I was reading the province senior advisor reports, they were all the imperative to do the reports had come from SACS RD. And I was wondering if you knew of any relationship between SACS RD and Phoenix, if they would be, if people at that level, the Joint Chief of Staff, the RD division, would be giving direction to, for instance, the Phoenix directory.
Well, they would be passing a request and so forth, but the chain of command would go through me.
I see. So were you then in touch with the Joint Chiefs of Staff?
Well, we had OSHA reports going back and forth.
About Phoenix.
About anything, yeah. I mean, like those private senior advisor reports we send out.
Okay.
Every month.
Do you know anything more about the people who were in Saxa Revolutionary Development who would have been taking an interest in Phoenix, who I could go and talk to about how that they organized, how they, what their discussions and were like about Phoenix at that level?
No. It was that faceless Pentagon
bureaucracy. Okay, it was just as faceless to you as to everybody else.
When I'd come home and report, I would report to the Secretary of Defense, Mr. Baird.
Okay.
Probably somebody under him who was the Assistant Secretary for International Security Affairs.
Okay.
People like that. I'd talk to people in the service, in the Joint Chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
I'd probably talk to whoever ran Sykes at the time.
But without it registering or making a strong impression on you as having been...
They're so interchangeable, and they change so often.
Okay. That's, from the memos I've seen, they change every few months.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Dealing with offices rather than people.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Can you tell me if Mr...
Blackburn, I think, when he...
Yeah, he was, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
He was Saxon.
That's right.
He's a good guy.
Yeah, I wrote a letter to him, and he wrote back and told me a lot about what he had done, but said that he did not have anything to do with Phoenix itself, and I'm sure he had staffers. He didn't even...
Yeah.
He said R.D. What was that? Research and development? You know.
Sure. Yeah.
He wasn't sure. What about the role, if there is a role, of SOG? In Phoenix.
I mean, I'm sure they took out of Phoenix such intelligence as they would be useful to them, but SOG, if I remember it, SOG's main mission was North Vietnam.
Right, okay.
So they wouldn't have much to do with Phoenix.
Okay. I understand that staffing and at the district level, in particular, of the Fong Hong advisors were special forces people.
No, normally they were, most of them were given a course out of Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
Through the military intelligence and then sent out to us, and most of them were non-special forces.
Because I've talked with a few special forces people who were running crews.
That may be. But that's different from being a Phoenix advisor.
Okay, now that's
the Phoenix advisor was this guy down at the bottom here at the district,
mm-hmm.
the IOCC.
Okay.
He was the advisor at that place.
Right.
Now, if there was, in the earlier days, I think we did borrow some special forces types.
Mm-hmm.
CIA borrowed certain special forces types to help manage the PRUs. Later, that was the military were folded out of that program.
Okay.
And the advising was picked up by CIA, and then finally we moved the teams into the police, and at that point the police picked up the advisory.
Okay. The Central Fong Hong Permanent Office, is that the Vietnamese group?
Yeah.
Okay. Were there Americans who were advisors to that group outside of the Phoenix Directorate? People who would sort of sit in the office with them, but were not in the Phoenix Directorate?
I don't think so.
No, okay. Can you tell me some of the people who were advisors to that group? Do you remember some of the names?
Well, Parker and Tilson and John Mason.
Right. And their deputies.
Yeah. That's what they did. They advised that central or the permanent office.
Okay. There were a Pru national commander on the Vietnamese side. His name was Phoc, I think. PH
Phoc.
Phoc C. Now, obviously, if there was a Prue National Commander, and I read this in a paper that Mr. Comer wrote called The Fiasco of Fong Huang, which was very critical of everything that was going on, but he mentioned the man's name as being Prue National Commander. I was wondering if there was a... Certainly, the Prue must have had an office itself at this central Fong Huang permanent office, where this Prue National Commander must have reported on the operations of Prue. In other words, Prue were a district, but they must have also had a central office who appointed people to the program and trained them and conducted their operations.
What we may have done, I don't know when Comer wrote that piece, but certainly in the earlier days, there was no national office. Okay. The CIA station stirred up the Prue at the different provinces, and there was no central Vietnamese authority. Then, as we and the CIA both wanted to regularize the Prue's movement, then we did set up a central office and asked that the Vietnamese appoint a commander for the overall organization.
Do you have any recollections about those people? Because I thought certainly if there was an advisor to the police special branch.
That was a CIA function, the advisor, not the... The Fong Huang guy didn't advise the Prue, it was the CIA.
Okay.
And if they asked that the Vietnamese appoint a commander for the national organization, as they may well have wanted to, I'm sure the Vietnamese would appoint one. Then the American CIA types would work with him on national level questions involving crews.
I suppose there must have been some way of recruiting the South Vietnamese who
mostly
came into the program.
That was my point. Mostly it was a local thing.
Homegrown.
As all of us wanted to establish Vietnamese government authority more and more over the elements of the problem, then we gradually tried to integrate PRUs into Vietnamese channels rather than having them just an adjunct of the Americans.
So this Prue National Commander was probably a later development, perhaps 69, 70,
or
something like that.
Yeah, that'd be my guess. I'm not sure.
Would that be something that if I was to interview one of Edith Parker or Mason or Tilton,
they might know.
But it's something I'd really like to pin down because it seems real important to me, and I'd really like to get that down.
I think Parker probably would know.
I
don't ring many bells on that.
Yeah. I'm sure that you knew things at different times and levels without knowing absolutely everything. I also have a memo from Mr. Funkhauser. I don't know why they sent me all his memos, but none from anybody else. On the subject of Fong Huang to William Sullivan, who was Deputy Assistant Secretary of State. And in it he mentions that there was a combined U.S.-GVN Fong Huang task force comprising top police, OSA, G2, and Phoenix reps, as well as himself, with troubleshoots at PIOX and DIOX. I was interested to know if you knew anything about it specifically, who the Americans were who were on it.
I would guess that would be, if Funkhauser wrote it, it probably was at the regional level.
So it might have been Greg Ager and Baumeister who went along with him on it. Okay, I see. Maybe something that would be very helpful to me is if... you could give me Mr. Funkhauser's address.
Sure. Right, block away, literally.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you'll be relieved to know I don't anticipate having any more questions for you.
After you get a lot of your research done,
mm-hmm.
you'll have more questions. You can't help it.
Well, probably,
and I'd be glad
to
help you out through those.
Okay.
I'm interested in having the story well told, properly told, mm-hmm. honestly told. And if you're confused on something, I'd like to clarify that. I'm not going to tell you something true.
But certainly
you're not going to believe me if I try to, so that's all right. And you're free to write whatever you want, of course. But the fact is that sometimes it can be very helpful to you to be able to check something out with them.
Okay.
And I'd be glad to.
I appreciate that. And certainly one of the things that you're as most service to me of this.
I know enough about this the world that if a wrong story gets out, it's hell on wheels to get rid of it.
No question about that.
Therefore, you should do all you can to make it correct.
It's
not necessarily favorable, but correct.
In Boston, we have, you know, the Celtics are somewhat deified, and there's one guy on the team named Danny Ainge who's always getting in fights, so everybody loves him. And he got in a fight with Tree Rollins from Milwaukee, and during the fight, Tree Rollins, who is a 7-footer, bit Danny Ainge's finger. But whenever Danny Ainge goes back to the court where the team where Rollins is from, everybody in the stands yells at him, "Why did you bite Tree Rollins' finger?" And the story has changed over time that it was him who bit Rollins. And he said the most frustrating thing in his life is that is that the story now, everybody
absolutely
calls him a finger biter.
Yeah.
And it wasn't him at all. And
his finger was bitten.
His finger was bitten, but it doesn't matter how many times he says it, how many reporters he says
it's
it
there.
To, it's it's there. So I understand it. I mean, that how frustrating that would be. Okay. I have I got a lot of documents from Agency for International Development, which record related documents. One was a memo to a Lieutenant Colonel Hunt at the Phoenix Directorate, who I suppose was a person like Colonel Egger, who is mentioned earlier. And the memo was from John Mason. And it said, "The Phoenix Coordinator Orientation Course at Bung Tao upgrades U.S. advisors and free world people into Bung Hong. And also 97Bs at Fort Bragg under Colonel G.J. Gillard, Jr. When this was the Military Assistance Advisor Course that had been developed at Fort Bragg. The 97Bs were enlisted men. And I assume if it was at Fort Bragg, they were Special Forces people. Here again, it's the Phoenix Coordinator Orientation Course at Bung Tao.
That would be this district guy.
Okay.
It'd be probably any one of the levels. In other words, if they were organizing an orientation course,
mm-hmm.
I used to speak at them,
okay.
They would include the newly arrived district probably. People being assigned to Phoenix.
Okay.
You go down to Tokyo.
But again, the idea of a coordinator as opposed to an advisor, is it the coordinator is more of a generic term than a specific
person? Yeah, they'll get hung up
person.
On the difference in the names.
Okay.
I don't think they're significant.
Okay.
I mean, somebody would call them an advisor and somebody might call them a coordinator. You'd be the same.
Okay.
Yeah, I tried to make, when you made it, what was that other one? The guy had lost the advisor and therefore...
The coordinator was having problems. The advisor was at the district, and the coordinator, I understood, was at the province. Okay? Coordinating the Phoenix coordinator at the province.
Yeah.
And the coordinator perhaps was province level, whereas advisors are district level.
Yeah.
Because
those kind of names and, you know, the gibberish of the thing, you drive you crazy. But I wouldn't get hung up on that.
Okay. Did you know Colonel Gillert?
Well.
Okay.
If it's in Fort Bragg, I probably wouldn't.
Okay. Did Ambassador McManaway have a role in Phoenix?
Well, he was one of the directorates at the national level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was Phoenix and refugees and development, and one of them was planning or policy planning or something.
Okay.
Directorate. And that was kind of a general staff for me.
Okay.
For writing policy documents that were broader than any one directorate.
Okay.
So in a sense, he would help supervise what the Phoenix director was doing. He was to see what the refugees are doing.
So it's almost at a level a little bit higher than the like public safety or Phoenix or something.
It wasn't a specialist staff, it was the generalist staff.
Okay. Okay.
Technically it was on the same level as the others, but the function was different.
In the sense that like a business manager is at the same level as different program people, but...
But his job is a broader
one. Broader one, okay. Does the name Alain Entovan mean anything to you?
Sure. He was one of McNamara's whiz kids.
Okay.
He ran, well, I don't know, whatever the name of the office was, but systems analysis in Washington.
Okay.
And they used to take all the statistics and grind them around in different ways and come out with conclusions.
Was he perhaps one of the people involved in the computerization of the Phoenix files?
Well, he would have been above that.
What about Colonel Stanley Kanarowski?
That doesn't ring a bell at all.
Okay.
No, I think we did the computerization ourselves on Vietnam. We tried to get
okay, because Frank Scotton said that you always had three or four assistants. A writer, a systems person. In my notes I have the four. Somebody like Mr. Baumgartner and Mrs. Scott and one other person. Territorial security. Who was your computer person that helped you or that actually was in charge of the computer system? I think it was Big Mac. Is that the name of the Phoenix computer system? Can you tell me who that person was? I'd be very interested to... discuss that aspect with the person responsible for it.
There are a whole bunch of them. You know, I probably can't name the precise one who worked on Big Mac, but Jim Green was one that worked in that whole computer field, computerized information field. I encouraged a great deal of that because we were getting all the statistics, and if you could get them on the computers, you could play them back and forth a little better and see things that you couldn't see from the raw data.
That's what Frank Scott was saying, too.
Yeah, and it was really quite interesting, some of it. I never really believed the numbers as absolutes, but they really helped you think about the problems.
Okay.
And as I remember, Jim Green played a role in it.
Is
he would give some other names. He's around here somewhere.
Was he a CIA person,
he was probably paid by aid an army civilian. I really don't know.
Okay.
Paid him.
Well, I
the army civilian.
I was just trying to understand where he might have come, what his background might have been. That's
at the computer business.
Is that with a E at the end or just a G R E E N?
And unfortunately, that's one of the more common names in the world. I think he lives out in Northern Virginia, someplace. Doesn't count. Probably lost his headphones. That's not my headphones.
Okay. It seems to me an interesting aspect of Phoenix. That now they have the.
He might be able to help you at least, or he might be able to put you in the right directions.
They have the Fong Hong Management Information System.
Oh, amen.
Is now available.
Oh, really?
And through the National Technical Information Center. Oh. And the entire list of names from all the way from 67 to 73 is there, and it's available, and for anybody to go in and look at it if a person had that interest. But it is there.
Yeah.
And I know computer doesn't seem to be, systems analysis does not mean much to your average reader, but in writing about Phoenix, I think it's important that I have to address that and how that came about. So it's important to me to talk to a person.
You know, we would use it for control of how the local people were doing. You know, if one province was reporting that they captured a lot of category C's and mm-hmm. no category A's, and another was saying it captured 15 category A's, why first to check whether there's any truth to the second story,
mm-hmm.
But then if it comes out to be basically true, then obviously the second problem is doing a hell of a lot better than the first one.
Okay. So in this way you could judge whether people were doing their jobs or not.
I don't believe the numbers right offhand, but you use them as a basis for questions.
Okay. And these are also the dossier files of everybody that's there too.
They gradually worked those up. That was a hell of a problem to get that going. Okay. I'm not sure it ever got going all that well. They had an awful time getting.
There's how many? 8,000 at least available on one of the discs.
I think they added up to the
16. Okay. Can you tell me who is the chief American advisor to police special branch?
Special branch? He'd be a CIA officer, and I don't know.
Okay.
At any one time.
I understand that Colonel William Pappy Greer was the American advisor to the National Police Field Force.
Maybe.
Would that seem likely? Would you have known who that person was? Also?
I probably would have known of him. He would have been subordinate to the chief public safety advisor.
And that's the way I understand it. I've talked with Michael McCann.
Oh, well, that's
and
the Greer fellow would be subordinate to him.
Okay.
Because the field force was under the public safety.
But the field force was an action arm of Phoenix.
In the same sense that anything else was.
Okay. Right, because anything could be called in to do
sure.
what was
necessary.
Sure, if
you had a chore that needed a field force mission,
okay.
Try to get the field force to go out and do it.
What is a Prefix 3? Is that a Foreign Service term?
Prefix
3. Does that mean anything?
Prefix?
I talked with Carl Bernard, who was a province senior advisor, actually in this
Han Nguyen. Oh,
yeah, and
very thoughtful guy.
He said that a lot of interesting things, but one of them he said was, "We who were prefix threes," and I was wondering if that meant Foreign Service Officer
that
three.
Mean Colonel?
O3.
O3.
I see.
Maybe. I think that means Colonel. To the military. Now there's an FSO 3 also.
Mm-hmm.
But Carl Bernard would have, if he's saying we, and he was a colonel,
mm-hmm.
and he would be referring to the colonel side of that.
Okay. Do you know, do you keep stay in touch with Mr. Bernard?
Bernard?
Yeah.
I haven't seen him in several years. I did hear from him about 3 or 4 years ago.
Okay.
Had a short conversation.
I tried to. My trips to Washington are so hectic. I was going to try and get to see him, but I don't have enough time this time.
Is he around here?
Yeah, he's in Virginia, Northern Virginia. He has a business called International Systems and Applied Technology. And I asked the secretary what
that's
they did, and she said she didn't know.
That's as good a name as my own.
Okay.